So you're still drilling down on that LDOT approval?
Oh, I've even looked into it further. I was saying
that
last night at the 7 to 40 Alliance, they had the gentleman from LDOT, the engineer, that is actually heading up the I-95.
For the record, the minutes were approved as presented by...
I learned a lot.
...vote of those who were in the room at the time. I'd also like to recognize the presence of Council President Kovac and Councilman Redd. Before we go to the first order of business, I'm going to get my legs in first, exercise and prerogative of the chair. And I'm going to start out by, one, commending our police department and the officers, and particularly involved in the double murder in the Newark area in the Harbor Club apartment. And the fact of the matter is, you had two murders, and we acted consistent with our policies and practices, and I think it was 2 days later, we had perfected an arrest, had suspects in order. And when I looked, the same day those two murders occurred, there was a murder in the city, and you may say I'm comparing apples and oranges, but I'm saying this for a reason. There's no suspect in that murder in the barbershop in the city. My point being, our policies and our practices are working. A lot of it has to do with manpower and the number of officers that we have available. And what I want to do is see that continue so that it doesn't get to the point where we have the kind of problems that we're seeing in other jurisdictions and the other challenges. And I think a lot of it has to do with manpower and the number of officers on the street and available to work. So get my licks in on that. Second, consistent with what I said earlier in the Finance Committee meeting, the closing meeting, just so nobody be surprised tonight, it's my understanding from some members of the General Assembly who have been saying it publicly that they're going to try to act expeditiously to make sure that the outlaw on bath salts is done, and it continues, and they're going to try to act expeditiously to see to it that that ban continues. I am going to, at the end of the meeting tonight, make a motion to ask council to have the president send a letter to the General Assembly supporting that ban, that continuation of the ban of that law. So just not asking you to act on it, talk about it now. Just want everybody to know what I plan to do tonight, Councilman Smile.
I just want to clear, I agree with the ban, but in keeping with my philosophies and my position, I won't be supporting the letter to the General Assembly.
And that has consistently been your personal practice.
Right.
Okay. With that, the first item on the agenda is the ordinance number 12-004, and I don't know who's going to present either from the administration or from the department itself. Councilman Smiley.
I can speak as finance. I had discussions with Mr. Milowicki, who had to leave for an appointment in between meetings. And what this does is basically we have the police revolving fund where when they're hired on duty for events, those funds go into that, which is makes it a clear and transparent process of what's coming in, what's going out. Currently, the money's just committed to the general fund. This basically establishes another line in the budget, the expense line, so it will show those funds coming in clearly to everyone as to that outside revenue coming in through the process. That's all this does.
Any questions, comments? Councilman Cartier.
Yes, and I think the rate at which we were billed for our paramedics is $61 and some change per hour. Is that the established billing rate?
It's around that. I'm not sure, but this doesn't change whatever that is. Okay. It just opens up the process.
The Office of Finance, that's correct. $61.25 per hour for services.
I'd like to recognize the presence of Councilwoman Fitzpatrick. Co-Chairman Bell.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just to enlighten Council a little bit, we're all familiar with some of the different events and assignments that our county police get involved in communities and various public organizations. But could we maybe have just an explanation on what type of events or what type of functions that our paramedics often are requested to get involved in that we would be charging, an hourly rate?
Larry Tan, Chief of Emergency Medical Services. While we certainly don't do anywhere near the volume that the police do in contractual duty jobs, we do have requests to do advanced life support coverage for some events, some of which are repetitive year in and year out. Examples of which, there are some triathlon sporting events where we're asked to provide coverage for the sporting event. Annually, there's the Delaware Marathon, which is held in May of every year. And in some circumstances, other events such as stockholder meetings or other private affairs. So those would be just an example of when we would be requested to provide dedicated coverage. Certain University of Delaware football games, homecoming, for example, are events that they typically will ask for an advanced life support presence.
Mr. Chairman, would other government agencies such as the city, some of the towns be exempt from that if they were having a function, a parade, or something that is involved in a town or other municipalities, or would we also be billing them?
We typically have not gotten those kind of requests from a municipality. The position that we've taken over the years has been that if it's dedicated coverage, that an entity or an organization for a function is requesting coverage that's going to result in overtime costs, that we only seek the reimbursement of the overtime costs. The goal is that if we're providing dedicated coverage for an event that's not available for 911 calls, we don't want to be drawing resources from the community that would be otherwise used for 911 calls to staff a private event.
I'd like to recognize the presence of Councilman Sheldon and Council President Kovac.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If I'm hearing this correctly, then it appears that this program is authorizing additional spending, which we are not. It's not per se county money. It's money that we're collecting from third party sources, and then providing back to the paramedics for that extra support that they're offering at these other events. Like if they go to the University of Delaware or someplace and provide that additional support, the county is getting reimbursed for that, but this allotment is allowing that to be a, quote, revolving fund, mm-hmm. so the county then can pay the paramedics. Is that correct?
Dave Del Grande, Office of Finance. Yes, sir, that's correct. It'll be set up basically as a revolving fund, so it'll be self-sustaining fund itself.
Okay, so then it's not, we're not just, because you'll look at the Ed Milwicki's note at the bottom, and it could be interpreted that we're spending, additional county revenue when it's really coming from, it's self-supported, in other words. Okay.
It will mirror the police.
Okay. Any other comments, questions, suggestions? Hearing, seeing, go to overview of 2011 crime in Newcastle County with emphasis on violent crime. Chief?
Yes, sir.
Mayor? Yes, sir.
Scott McLaren, Chief of Police. First of all, sir, I'd like to thank you for any type of support we have for legislation that's pending for bass offs. That's something that's very near and dear to our hearts. Not only affects police, it affects paramedics, it affects nursing, and it is something that's on the front burner down at Dover. I was at a press conference down there last week, and there's a lot of people that are behind that for obvious reasons. Don't know exactly what order you want me to follow, but I can say we're still pulling the final numbers from last year to tally them to the year prior to, but we do have some good information as far as crime appears to be overall down between 8% and 9%. 2011, we had 11 homicides with 12 victims. 10 investigations have been cleared, when it's pending a charge decision by the Attorney General's office. Majority of those homicides were cleared within 8 hours. Two were cleared beyond 48 hours. And that's what we find, and that's why we handle the serious incidents like we do. We blitz a crime and put as many people on it. So your 48-hour window is, that's your window of opportunity to make arrests, and they do an excellent job with that. Seven were involving a handgun, two involving a knife, two involving physical assault. As far as if the offender knew the victim or vice versa, two knew one another, two were strangers, several domestics, one was robbery, stranger, and robbery firearm with drug involvement. We can see a trend. We went back to 2004. We run between 5 homicides and 11 homicides a year. 2010, we had 10. The year before, 9. The year before that, 13. So we kind of fluctuate between 5 and 11. Let's say a median range around 7, 8, 9, something like that. Overall, our clearance rate for the past year was 91%. We run in the high 70s, usually 80% for clearance rate. Robberies, we looked at about a 5% decrease in robberies, which is a good sign. Aggravated assaults were down about 10%. Rapes were down about 2%. Okay, majority of our rapes, the offender is known to the victim. We have very few, if any, last year stranger rapes as far as that unknown person kicking a door in, using a weapon to sexually assault a victim. There are very few and far between. The location of our homicides, 3 were in the roadway, 6 inside of a residence, 2 or 1 in the stairway, and 1 in the parking lot. Calls for service are down about 5% overall, from 137,000 to 130,000. I do have a breakdown as far as what our busiest shifts are. Of course, it's usually the 3 to 11, 4 to 12 shift. That's no surprise there. Our shootings overall, 29 in 2010, 30 in 2011, up 3%. Shots fired, 60 in 2010, 75 in 2011. The shootings are where someone is struck, the shots fired, or the random calls that we get called in. Hey, I just heard a bunch of shots. We get there and there's shell casings on the ground. If we're lucky, if it's an automatic weapon, then we do the usual, start calling around the hospitals and looking for blood and stuff like that. So our random shootings, we're just shooting a gun up in the air or shooting a house or something like that, and that's on an uptick a little bit. Only to show that a lot of people that we're dealing with out there are armed and dangerous. What other type of information are you looking for there, sir?
You're doing quite well. Councilman Holland.
Yeah, it just seems to me, and I don't have any official statistics, but from just getting the notices, it seems like there's an increase in armed robberies, even though I hear you said it was 5% less,
right,
in home invasions. And you know, I just happened to have this conversation with council to council on yesterday. It seems like every time I get one of these notices now, it just seems like it's increasing, which is it a seasonal thing with robberies? I mean, are there more in the fall or the winter than there is in the summer? It just seems like I've seen more of this than I've been seeing before.
On our robberies, majority robberies, and I'll have one of the majors address this in a little bit more detail. Our fast food delivery people are our most common victim. The false calls come in. We've tried to educate fast food delivery places that if a call comes in and the caller ID doesn't match the address, you know, a little, you know, sign should go off that something, you know, might be bad, or in areas that where there's been robberies before. The home invasions, Mark, are you going to touch on those? Or it seems like it's on uptick because they're getting a little bit more media attention. A lot or some of our home invasions are drug related, and they happen for the obvious reasons. Major, would you like to add, or either major?
Mark Hitch, major. Yeah, sir, they are, we do have seasons for robberies. The summertime, obviously, there's more people out and about, therefore there's more victims out and about. Wintertime, we usually see a little decline in them. Holidays, they bounce back up again. As the Colonel said, we have trends with our pizza delivery, food delivery robberies. We go through a period of time where it seems like we get a bunch of them. Generally, A lot of times they're related group of individuals, and like with the homicide, detectives get on them pretty quickly, and when we clear them, they seem to fall off for a while again. So we do have those kind of spikes. The home invasions, again, the colonel hit on that. It does seem, and the lieutenant and I were just talking about it, it does seem that we get the same recaps, and it seems like we're seeing a lot more of those. The robberies being down, I think we're seeing a lot more armed robberies than we used to. A lot of our robberies used to be more strong arm on the street, and now it seems like more of our robberies are involving weapons. More of them, whether they're drug related or whatever, they are stepping up and actually going into houses sometimes more now than I remember seeing in the past.
Thank you.
Councilman Wan.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. First of all, no, I speak for all council members. Thank you for keeping us apprised of crime statistics. We received what seems to be a rash of home invasions and crimes along Concord Pike behind the shopping centers, and we've sent out alerts basically just taking the information that you have and trying to make sure the civic leaders get it. Again, the crimes of opportunity, it just seems that folks sometimes are clueless that they leave their car open and valuables there, and they're surprised that their car gets hit, or they're surprised when they don't leave their garage door. You know, I don't want to say you're asking for it, but it's just shocking how many folks just don't get it.
You're 100% right, sir. We, at one point, and we still do have officers that will knock on the door and say, do you realize your garage door is open? Or we'll leave a note, and same way with cars, and we'll leave their digital cameras out there, their brand new iPhones, their iPads, and they're easy pickings. We just recently had a couple burglaries where the suspect went through the pet door. Must have been a pretty good size pet hole for a person to get it through there, but it's like you stated, it is easy picking. We try to educate whenever we have an area that we feel as though is getting targeted for a crime. We do our reverse 911 to make people aware of that, to educate them again. Since gold is so high right now, we have a lot of people that are going in and they're passing the TVs, the DVRs, and DVDs, and all that stuff, and they're going right to the jewelry box and grabbing the gold, because that's where you want to go. And then you can take your gold just about anywhere. You don't have to go to pawn shop anymore. Just pick up your Sunday newspaper, and you can take it to wherever and get pretty good bang for your buck.
I'd like to recognize the presence of Councilman Powers, who's over here to the right at the moment. Councilman Smiley.
I mean, no matter how much you try to educate, I think it won't happen to me.
Right.
A few weeks ago, I was out in one of the new communities that I will represent in 2012, and I knocked on a lady's door, and she opened the door, jerked it open, and said, can't you read? Yes, ma'am. What's that sign say? No soliciting. So why'd you knock? That's because I love your new Mercedes in the driveway, which is true, so I thought you might want to take the keys out of your front door. I just couldn't walk away and leave the keys. I said, now you have a nice day. I turned around and walked away. She's there. Have a nice day. But just give me... hanging right there. Just could have went in the house, could have done whatever you wanted. But I just couldn't walk away without knocking. But yeah, we're just...
I can picture that.
You know, we're just absent-minded. That's it. I mean...
Thank you for doing that, sir.
Yeah, I really liked the car. But it was foreign, I couldn't get caught in it.
Captain Michelle.
Yes, Chief, I asked for a burglary prevention and... Mr. Sneed and Sergeant Malone did a very good job up in Pike Creek, which said about 40% of these robberies are unlocked doors and windows and stuff like that. It was amazing. But the question came up about the only thing that came negatively towards the council, the county, was a 911 reverse. How does that work? Because... what the person said, I'm just going by what the person said at the stood up in Sherwood Park. One is on one side of the street, Sherwood Park Two is on the other. He said there was, like, according to this person, there was 10 invasions in Sherwood Park One. Sherwood Park Two got nothing back.
You mean alert-wise?
Alert-wise. Is there any... I'll be quite honest with you, I don't even know how 911 reverse works. If you could just give me a 30,000 foot view from that, and then update me
I'll
on.
I'll take a stab at it because the technology has been updated recently. At one time, we only could do a zip code. Then now we're down. We believe we can look at where the trends are and do a radius around that to capture every development. Now, no matter what, we're going to end up cutting one development in half somewhere. That's usually going to be on the outskirts. It's not where the core problem is. So the way we do that is we're going to try to address the core problem and go out beyond that. Another problem is if your phone number is unlisted, you still don't get that information. And as everyone in this room knows, a lot of people are going with a cell phone versus a hard line at their house. And unless you call in, provide that information to us and say you want to be on our alert and here's my number's unlisted, that's how we're missing a lot of people also.
Okay. Thank you.
So we try to use that as a tool when it's appropriate. Another thing I did forget to touch on, comparing our clearance rates to national, just for, can you bear with me, homicide, ours is like 91% for last year, nationally it's 64.8. Robberies, for us was 40.32, nationally 28.2. So it's just about, well, almost double. Assaults, for us, 81.29%, nationally 56%. Rape, 74.58% for us, nationally 40%. So our detectives do a very good job, our guys and girls on the street, because not all crimes are stopped by detectives. It's a good grab by someone on the street also, a good car stop. So we're doing much better than the national average. I wish they all could be 100%, but sometimes our victims aren't very good victims sometimes.
Councilman Snow.
And again, I want to congratulate the department on the clearance rates. My frustration with our clearance rates is, giving government what it is, everybody knows we lost the grant because our clearance rates were too high. Because we did a better job than other jurisdictions, we couldn't get the grant money to help improve what we do. There's got to be something wrong with that thought process.
I agree, and that's across the board in our communications, our paramedics. We're a victim of our own success, that our people do 150%, and that's why you see those rates versus some of the numbers that you see across the country. And the number of officers, paramedics, and communication individuals that cover the area that we cover, they do an incredible job.
Well, Co-Chairman Bell.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Sunday, I didn't have a voice, and my wife and everybody ran a house, so it was great. So that's, I'm still strained a little bit. But, I think that when we take a look at our overall success as far as clearances and, statistic-wise, nationally, we're doing an absolutely fantastic job. And it's a credit to the men and women of the department, the center, our emergency medical services being involved. But kind of go up to the 10,000 foot view and look down, and there's a price to be paid with how we're operating right now. And we talked back in 2009 that we really don't have the number of officers for the size county and the number of calls that we have. And so I think to put things in perspective is that it seems to me that a lot more is occurring out there severity-wise, armed, and shots being fired. We've never in the past had the magnitude, I think, of weapons being used the way they're being used and free handled. And I think that one of the things that we as a council and a government have to take a look at is our path forward as far as at what point and how do we get there in increasing the numbers of our county police department. Because in my mind, we do an absolutely fantastic job. You do an absolutely fantastic job serving the citizens, but we're still doing more reactive policing than proactive policing. Some of the complaints that we get when we go to communities is the fact that some of the things that are occurring, they don't see the police officers. They see them respond when they're needed. They know the price to be paid. They know how good they are. But the fact remains that there is no deterrent as much as what we had at one point. And so I think that looking at it from a little different level and vision is that I still think we have a very serious problem. with staffing, with the number of officers we're able to put on the street, with the safety of the officers who are out there on the street, and how do we get to the point where in all segments of public safety, we're looking at becoming more proactive, more community policing, more deterrent than constantly reacting, running, responding. And I couldn't agree more with our chairman as far as, you know, our perspective, our county police and the tremendous service you do to some tremendous clearance rates and how you respond, how you do things. But I think that we have to, as we come into this new budget hearing and future budget hearings, you know, we fight to get a class going. We get a class going. As soon as you get out of that class, we're still in the same position we were because we're not over hiring. And so I see a tremendous job being done, but I think we as a council and a government need to really delve into this further as to, you know, are there minimum staffing levels that would better serve our folks and officer safety and everything, and how do we accomplish that? So I, you know, couldn't applaud you more and couldn't serve as an advocate for you more, but I think the thing is if we're crime, the type of crimes that are occurring today, these thugs, these folks that are out there, they know that we don't have officers in the communities as much as we used to have. Okay, so they have a, I think they, you know, the ones that are coming in from the outside and causing us havoc, you know, we're reacting to it and we're doing a tremendous job, but in order to prevent it and be more proactive, I go back to the same thing that we've talked about for a number of years now, is that somehow we've got to have number of officers congruent with the size county, the size complaints, and the type of policing we need to do.
I thank you, and I agree with you 110%, and this will probably get in the next step. You want a report on staffing, but one thing that we haven't had for 40 years was a line of duty death that we experienced this past year when Sergeant Joe Zerba, Lieutenant Joe Zerba, was stabbed because of an individual that was under the influence, one of the reasons. And that wasn't a gun, as we all know. That was a knife. So, yes, the weapons are out there. It's getting very much more dangerous to police. We recognize that. We try to train around that. We are 911 driven. And a stat that we have right here, our busiest shift is the 4 to 12 shift. Officers are committed 51% of the time on dispatches. Pre-planning events such as meetings we had to go to or court or intakes, about 10%. Self-initiated is 15%. Okay, that leaves us uncommitted time around 23%. Now the goal, you can look at numbers and everything, but if you're talking community policing, you would like to have almost half your shift dedicated to go out and be proactive. Go out and talk to kids, go out and knock on doors. It's difficult when you're being driven by the calls that are coming in right and left. We are testing as we speak. There's a group of young people in the public safety building right now testing. We are continuing to do backgrounds in hopes to get the next academy up and running. Right now we have 21 officers that are in the academy. I'm glad to report that they started the first day academy with 21. We are still at 21. I believe we have approximately 5 officers from the outside, 4 or 5, that are in this academy. But we have 27 vacancies as we speak today. Now, 6 of those are the 6 newly funded, federally funded positions. So a year, it would be 21, but now we have the luxury of 6 more. So we're creeping up there again. We're on this roller coaster. I've never seen a department fully staffed because of people coming, going, and all that stuff. And I do have some of those numbers, sir, if you wanted to delve into that a little bit.
I do, but I also, while we're giving accolades where accolades do, I want to thank my colleagues here on council for their continued support of the police department, police endeavor. You know, when the administration has come forward and said, well, we don't know, and Councilman Bell and I said, no, we're adamantly insisting upon going forward with the academy. This council has deferred to what they think is the best interest of the operation of the police department. The same thing with tasers, and the other instruments and equipment that you need. There's been no question, no big brouhaha about supporting some of the other technical pieces that you need. And I think this council, as a council, is very supportive, and I just can't continue to go on down this path without recognizing that we realize as a council we're all in this together and depend on you to provide services for everybody. My other comment being, I'm looking over the weekend and I had my aide, as soon as the news releases come in, forward them to Representative Johnson. You know, three armed robberies in my councilmatic district over the weekend. But you don't need to look any further than the overall crime to see that we're really up against it. And as far as I'm concerned, you're going down the right path. And for those who want to say we've got too many people incarcerated, we got too much this and too much, well, you know what? This is me speaking. Some of these thugs are not rehabilitatable, and if we have to build another jail, then we just have to build another jail, because you can't keep having them running loose on the street, running up and down the street selling crack cocaine like it's popcorn in their underwear and shooting like it's a Wild Wild West. I'm sick of it. Before I go too far, why don't you go ahead and give us an update as to where we are with staffing. Councilman Smiley.
Just one quick question that relates to staffing. You mentioned the class. I don't know if you have the numbers. How many applicants do we have to spend time going through to get to the 21 that met the criteria to go into the class?
The rough gauge is looking at about 650 people to get an average class, about 25.
So it is.
You know, we are selective. We want the cream of the crop. We want the people that want to be here and do our type of police. And we have kept that bar high, and that has really benefited us as far as retaining some people. So.
And I agree. I don't think we'd lower the standards just to get a class. But I just wanted to know that it's been a part of our ongoing problem, as it is with 911, paramedic.
Yes.
It's just such a huge pull in order to get that minimal amount to get in there.
And it gets a little bit more difficult each
time. Yeah, because you've already got it.
And then you have some people that reapply, and maybe they didn't make it the first time just because of one thing. They might have taken care of that. So we might look at those individuals a second time around.
Now it's been 20 years since I did the drug instead of 19, so maybe that will help.
Well, the biggest one is ecstasy out there. It's hard to find kids that have not experimented with ecstasy. And if you use ecstasy once, you're out of our process. Just like acid, just like heroin, just like LSD, and the list goes on. We don't want you because we don't know what that drug's going to do to you 5, 10, 15 years down the road.
You turn out like me.
Exactly.
Scary.
But I appreciate the support also, sir, because every once in a while I'll get an email from someone in this room saying, this is what happened, can you look into it? I appreciate the fact that you're asking us to look into it instead of just taking one side of the story, because there always is two sides of the story, and the other side coming from our side is always a little more interesting sometimes. So thank you very much for your patience.
I had that discrimination charge, and when I went and met with the guy, he flat out told me they're discriminating against me because they want to know why I left my last job, and it's none of their business. I said, okay. I don't want to hear it. I mean, we do need to know why you left your last job.
Before I got too excited, was getting ready to go too far, one of the things I wanted to mention that I think is very, very important, we all need to recognize, is that right now we're following through and following up and doing our due diligence on all crime. There's a certain police department in a certain jurisdiction, if your car is broken into, you don't get a police officer, you get a case number. If something happens to your vehicle, your windows are all gone, tires are all gone, you get a case number, you call your insurance company, you don't see an officer. So, I don't want us to ever get reduced to that. And so, you know, I'm going to continue to support you, and we're going to continue to support you so that we don't get there.
Appreciate that, sir. Would you like to cover staffing real quick?
Yes, sir, please.
As of this date, the end of 2012, we had 51 officers that are eligible to retire. The following year, it's up to 67. 91, 98, at the end of 2016, if we stay stagnant to where we are right now, I should say stagnant, at the end of 2016, we have a third of the department that can retire, 101 officers. As far as officers that have to retire at age 55, in 2012, none this year, the following years, 3, 4, 4, and 6. So we'll be losing officers if they do decide to stay on to their 55 years of age. So we're reaching that point where the academies were, we were very heavy at one time, they're all eligible to retire. And as the economy gets better and the job market gets better, we might be losing some officers. That's all up in the air. Because the academies that are coming up eligible to retire, they're academies that we started asking for, you know, a four-year degree. So now we're having officers that are at that, coming at the retirement age, and they have a four-year degree, so it makes them more marketable versus officers prior to that that just needed a high school diploma. So,
Councilman Redman.
Thank you. Scott, since you're ahead of the public safety, can we get these figures sent to us with the paramedics and the police department and 911 calls about the age and who can retire? I mean, not their names, but how many can retire and how many we need in staffing?
Yes, I'll get that complete report to you. And communications, we just lost or just had two dispatchers retire, both had 34 years of service. They are done as of this past weekend. That's 68 years of experience going out the door. Paramedics, we've just lost a couple individuals that had 30 plus years of service. So it's across the board, and I'll get those numbers for you. I do have some positive news. We're able to, when I came back, I asked Laurie King not only to look at grant funding for just the police, I asked her to look for funding for EMS, communications, Office of Emergency Management. And with the assistance of Chief Tan, we were able to get a grant for just close to about $100,000 from the Assistance to Firefighters grant. We have never gotten any money from that segment because we're really not a fire service. The paramedics aren't attached to fire service, but we are looking into a driving simulator, just like the jet pilots have and everything else, because of the amount of accidents that we have. So what we did, we put a package together where the police will pull X amount of money from grant funding, and then since we have this, we'll pull that funding together, and we're going to get one simulator where paramedics and police officers can both train on that. So the firefighter grant people kind of like that idea as integration and something innovative, and we hope to have that piece of machinery within the next 6 months. We're looking at some the technology, looking at some bids and all that. So all in all, it's going to be close to $250,000 worth of grant equipment that's coming in, and on the police side there's a firearms training simulator that will be coming in also. That's not going to replace putting people behind a wheel and going out on a track and everything else, but these things are incredibly accurate. I've sat in one. You can actually get car sick sitting in one of these things. That's how real they feel, the noises and everything else. It teaches you good driving skills, what to avoid. We can plug weather events in there. Just about everything is 100 different scenarios. So we're looking to the train public safety, not just segments, or not just look for grant funding. We'll take money from wherever we get it. And there's a small match to it that I think we can offset that, about $20,000 to get close to a $200,000 machine. So Lori King continues to do an incredible job there, you know, looking around. It's our job to point things to her, and then she starts to dig and says, does it fit us? And this piece, it does fit us. So first time grant, receiving it from the Assistance for Firefighters grant, so that's great news for us. So definitely more to come.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just wanted to you know, make a comment and ask a question, and I want to return to Councilman Bell's, you know, comments about, you know, having enough staffing to do proactive policing. And, you know, you can look across New Castle County and we can identify communities that, you know, have real problems as far as crime and have caused a huge amount of response calls for service. And, you know, when you look at the report you just gave us about the amount of retirement that's going to go on, I also have to factor in my mind the fact that we have people that are deployed overseas or in the military service. We have people that are on some sort of light duty because they have an issue like that. And I just see we have just enormous challenges with police staffing. And I know that, you know, with the retirements coming on, it's not going to be better. It's going to be more challenges. And I think for me as a district councilman, you know, and looking at the issues I confront in my district, which, you know, I have several serious, you know, issues with certain communities, I got to take this, you know, this is a very serious topic for me. And in light of the tragedy that we all in the county have endured over the last year, you know, and I just kind of want to get some really specific data regarding what percentage of the shifts that go out, you know, in our 24/7 policing operation, you know, we have a certain amount of folks that are supposed to staff those. What percentage of those shifts go out not properly staffed? And I would like to know that number, and I think a lot of members of council would like to know that number. It's a real good way of gauging whether we're, you know, where we are in terms of, you know, deploying the amount of officers that we should have on a shift. Now, we have two shifts a day or three?
Three shifts a day that overlap.
Okay.
And they overlap for a reason.
Right.
So we call in, we might have a platoon putting out 25 officers, but they're going out on the street at the same time that there's a platoon that's out there for a period of time. Mm-hmm. We deploy those officers based on detailed studies that we do every month and past year, and when are our busiest times.
Right.
And then we try to make sure we have the most officers on the street at the critical times. I get concerned if a platoon is putting out less than 25 individuals. Mm-hmm. If that does happen, and if we know ahead of time, such as deployment, pregnancies, long-term, whatever, that we have the other special units that will shut down those units for a day or two, say jump in uniform, you're going back to the street. So we're constantly doing that patchwork to make sure that the numbers and officer safety are the numbers that should be out there. Now, would I like to deploy 50 officers per squad? Definitely. But we have some internal positions that have to be filled, such the people that run the data, the people that run. We have two officers back in the jail cell area. Help me out here. Other officers? Officers that are assigned to the complaint service officer position. Most time they're officers that are on light duty. They're ones that if they can handle a complaint over the phone and the people want to talk to an officer saying, take all the information and we'll either email you your report or we'll send it out to you. And that way it takes, we don't have to send an officer out to someone's mm-hmm. house in that situation. So we're always trying to be incredibly inventive. This past year, I was allowed to bring back four retired officers to help to do backgrounds. That's four less officers I had to bring inside to help do backgrounds. These are four officers that were retired that either worked in human resources in the past, either I worked with or worked for directly. They came in, hit the ground running, and they're doing an incredible job even as we speak. With the direction of the county executive, we sat down with the CHRO and we looked at our process. Why does things take so long? Let's constantly reinvent ourselves, and can we squeeze this down? Can we do this? We moved the second polygraph operator in to our HR because that is about a four-hour test. So a polygraph operator is doing two people. So we put a second one in and even a third one if we had to. So we're constantly looking at how can we knock that time down a little bit. I'm looking at every class they have in the academy. What are fluff classes and what are certified classes that we have to put people through? Can I reduce it by a couple weeks? So we're constantly looking and trying to reinvent, be innovative, and look at any way we can handle crime differently. Work smarter, not harder, I guess is the best way to look at some things. But I think we're doing a pretty good job with the numbers that we have. And again, I appreciate all the support. I hope that answers your question. I didn't mean to cut you off.
No, and I'm glad that you're pursuing a very creative ways of meeting staffing levels, and that's necessary across this government. But I do get concerned that for officer safety and when it comes to even the question of proactive policing, you know, we're really straying farther and farther away from that goal as time goes on. So by having, you know, very specific data about staffing levels on shifts and percentages, we're reviewing crime stats for the year. What percentage of shifts went out, you know, understaffed? That's a very useful piece of information for me, and I think other members of council to understand as we look at this whole issue, you know, staffing and police.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Colonel, just a couple more questions. Like, as far as the minimum staffing, there really, from what I'm hearing, I guess there isn't a set amount of officers that need to be on the street, or I know there's a goal to have a certain amount, but is there actually a minimum staffing that if you go below, that you're able to use, as we've talked, overtime to fill some of them gaps?
We're using some overtime right now to fill some of those gaps. We don't have a set number, Ash, answer your question, and the reason why we don't is every platoon right now, they're allowed to have four officers off on vacation, four slots. And even, you know, at having four slots, sometimes people don't get their vacation picks. That's what happens. You're a new guy on the block. You might have to be here a couple years before you get your vacation pick. Then you have to factor in, did an officer just sprain his or her ankle the night before? Do we have an officer out that's pregnant? Do we have an officer out that extended FMLA that's going through therapy? So it's a very fluid situation that we look at daily and weekly. It's a moving target. The goal I like to see is about 25 going out minimum. And that seems like a low number also, but you have to keep in mind too, at any given time we have detectives that are out working. They all have radios and they're available to respond. I have a drug unit out there. I have a mobile enforcement team that's out there, and they're all pecking away at the crimes also. Not necessarily being dispatched, but they're available to back an officer up. And you'll hear that a lot if you ever listen to the radio, that a detective will back up a uniform officer. And that's what we want. We want everyone out there knowing that just because you're a detective doesn't mean you're too good to go out and handle or back up an officer on an accident or a domestic or fight, robbery, whatever. So we have those other numbers that are out there. So that's why we never really had a dead set number. That was how we always looked at it. Guys, if you have anything you want to fill in there, but that's a moving target. It's pretty much where we are right now.
I guess just to follow up on that, the one thing that, you know, when you look at budgets, you look at managing budgets, managing departments, one of the things is always, how do you reduce overtime? How do you save overtime? Councilman Cartier, Councilman Street and I have had conversations about it, and here recently Councilman Cartier has had some suggestions and things that, is there room for some of the officers doing some overtime to fill some of the gaps? Because, you know, it's easy to criticize, it's easy to come back and say a certain paramedic has more overtime than anybody, but that's the paramedic that comes in and fills in when the gaps are there. Same thing in the 911 center. And do we have officers that, when the numbers are down, that if overtime were available, that possibly we could utilize a little bit more overtime? Because when you look at the numbers compared to full-time permanent people and getting them on board and then paying them full-time salaries,
right,
and paying out some overtime to fill some of them gaps, it makes a lot of sense sometimes to pay that overtime. And it's easy for a manager to come back and say, look what I've done, look how much money I've saved. But if the service isn't out there, especially in the paramedic program, then are we really accomplishing?
And that's what we're doing right now during our evening shift, our busy shift. We are plugging some of those holes with some overtime positions, just to make sure we have enough officers out there during those peak periods. So, yes, we are doing that. We do have grant funding also, but sometimes a grant will say, here's the area that you have to work, and it's based on high-level crime areas. That I have one grant that it's concentrated right in the Route 9 area. And it's just, I can't put an officer out there. A project has to be put forward. So, yes, there are different avenues that we have in doing that. Yes, sir.
Just seems to me that we ought to give yourself, as the colonel, the chief of the paramedics, and the chief of the 911, we always talk about tools in the toolbox. and give you as many viable tools that you can use to fill the gaps, to assure, you know, the best possible officer safety we can get, and the best possible number of officers and medics and 911 center personnel. So
I'd like to recognize your presence and call upon Councilman Tech.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You know, obviously, Chief, you know, you're facing a lot of challenges, you know, and it appears that, you know, there's been quite a few over the last budget cycles, you know. Obviously, you know, this body, especially this councilman, appreciates all you do, you know, as a police force. And obviously it seems, you know, apparent to us that, you know, you find yourselves reshuffling those obstacles each budget cycle as you try to get through it and maintain your staffing. And obviously, I think probably one of the most important things is your response times, you know, when the people are calling in. I, too, want to commend Lori Kane. I mean, we continuously hear over and over again as you come in, we've gotten a new grant, you know, that, you know, I guess you've identified and sent to her, and obviously she's strategically writing that's, you know, getting you accepted for them. So that's a big kudos. I know a few years ago we had gotten some grants, I guess they weren't renewed, where we're allowed you to do some projects in the parks. Parks seem to be an issue that attracts a lot of crime, a lot of people go there, and then a lot of things start to happen and evolve, and they get identified, and it grows. They were highly successful, but I guess it didn't get renewed. And
at one time, we had money available for parks patrol, and that's, you know, those officers would be just go out proactively patrol the parks, or be dispatched to the larger parks for the most part, your Banning, your Del Castle, and now your Glasgow, and that kind of stuff. But that over time, not there, but that's something we'll look at and reassess down the road. That if we have to, we'll somehow do that.
I too, hopefully. You know, and obviously that's what's out there, what's available to you, that you're able to secure, like grant funding. But I know the chairman's mentioned before, and myself, about I think communities might utilize some of the service a little bit more, like with speed control and patrols, if they could supplemental somehow. Sometimes it's a little bit hard for communities to come up with tight budgets for the monies.
Right.
If, you know, any type of grant could be available somehow, some way to supplement them a little bit, mm-hmm. they probably would engage a little bit more, or bring them in, which could alleviate some of our,
yes.
you know. So just
we're willing to look at anything. I always tell the guys, anything's on the table
exactly.
to take a look at, and then we can say no down the road, but I don't want to close my eyes to anything or any opportunity that's out there. So more willing to listen, read, or whatever, sit down with anyone that we have to sit down with and have some type of open dialogue, because I think that makes a world of difference, just having somebody sit down with a group of people and listen
mm-hmm.
to, you know, what their concerns are.
Yes, another, you know, demand on personnel that comes to mind, and it's a question that, you know, I kind of, a lot of times I'm out in the district looking at, you know, issues, and I see, you know, a state police officer and a county officer, and I'm just wondering, how many times are we called upon to reinforce state police, or, you know, in my jurisdiction, you know, which is adjacent to city police, in any given situation? Does that also, you know, factor into, you know, I know there are very precious few really state police around. So how many times do we end up, you know, responding and reinforcing them when they need help in their part of the policing jurisdiction?
It's pretty much 50-50 with the state police,
mm-hmm.
But that's usually on high priority calls, such as a bank robbery or shooting. We will find cars to help them. They'll find cars to help us. And once they get there, we try to clear them up, you know, right away, because they have to get back to their districts. The town of Ellesmere, we constantly go into town, but the town of Ellesmere, they also go outside the town, all the way over to Maryland Avenue, up to Lancaster Court Apartments, wherever they need to go to back up an officer. They're listening. If one officer's going, they'll answer up. The city of Newcastle City, constantly running with us, and we constantly support them. Some of the smaller departments will even go out if there's a homicide, or if they need the evidence detection unit, we'll allow that to happen. So it's pretty much paybacks or 50-50. The city of Wilmington, we rarely go into the city of Wilmington unless it's something extreme,
mm-hmm.
and we rarely call for their assistance coming out, knowing that I know some of the issues that they're dealing with also. Their communication center sits in the city of Wilmington. Our communication center dispatches Ellesmere, Newcastle City, other police departments.
Delaware City,
Middletown, so we're all right there at one console. So it's pretty easy, even though, you know, we always can pick up the phone and call the city of Wilmington, and we do. If there's a pursuit, if there's a foot pursuit, if the helicopter's helping look for somebody or anything like that, that's seamless integration, that there really isn't any hurdles, but we try not to openly depend on that because we never know what they have going on in their jurisdiction, and they don't know what's going on in our jurisdiction. So it's there when we push the button that we need more troops right away. They're there. If you're ever around and you hear an officer put out a call for help, that something is dire, you'll see police cars from every jurisdiction just about show up. But that's very rare. You're talking about the routine kind of stuff. But the routine call for us is domestic in progress. And we sometimes we have an Ellesmere cop with us, a Newcastle City cop, Delaware City, Middletown, and we do the same thing. So the citizens of Newcastle County, they get a rainbow of uniforms that show up at their front door. And that's a good thing, because other places in the country, they won't cross jurisdictional lines. Sorry for your luck, but that's one good thing we have here, being small.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Councilman Powers.
Yeah, just you hit on a topic that Councilman Bell and I in Southern Newcastle County and the state police, I think you know, we've talked about the jurisdiction, you know, it needs to go back whoever's the closest. And a lot of times the county police will be closer than the state police. And if it's a non-emergency, they're waiting hours for the state police to show up. I don't know how it was set up that way, what happens, just so most of the councilmen, if it's a subdivision, it's the county police. If it's not a non-subdivision, it's the state, which is most of my district.
Yeah, it's rather unique down there, sir. You are correct. Not only it's a little tougher to police down there because of geographically getting some cars down there, because a lot of the resources are up here because the crime volume is higher. We try to work hand in hand with the state police down there also, but they are few and far between.
They're probably least. I'll be more likely to see a county cop than I will the state police. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we have not that many subdivisions. On the east side, you know, Odessa National is the furthest most south. On the west side, we missed the mail, a couple of little subdivisions with 10 or probably 20 houses. But it really, for my constituents, really upsets them when the county police drives by, asks them something, and drives on, and then they're waiting 2 more hours for a state trooper to show up.
If that's a priority call, and I'll ask Dave to chime in if I don't cover this right away, if it's a priority call down, then Middletown or Odessa Towns, that area, if they know that they don't, that a trooper is coming from a distance, they'll yell over to one of our dispatchers and say, hey, do you have anyone in the area of? And if not, we'll find someone, and can you start heading that way? So it's not unusual for us to be the first call on a priority call that jurisdictionally might be the state police, or vice versa. So that interaction does go on at in the communication center. The state police, they sit physically right next to one another at the higher end, such as a burglary in progress, 3 o'clock in the morning. You want a cop there.
I think it's more
the routine.
We have a lot of county police good in that part of the county.
Yeah. About that too.
Driving to work, driving home.
I agree.
And it really, really upsetting my county. I mean, I've got quite a few. I've got a big area. They pay county taxes, and they don't see what they get. I'm just putting it out honestly.
We have to constantly reassess, you know, the numbers that we're looking at.
I think it happened during the Gordon administration when they changed that. I think it should be looked at again.
The jurisdictional agreement?
Yes.
That's been talked about a couple times, and it is.
I
can turn into it.
Bell and I have
nightmare.
Talked quite a bit lately about
yes.
Some real problems. Something it needs to be looked at. You know, we have no problem working in Middletown. City limits has 30-some cops.
Yeah.
You know, whatever, but we got 3 or 4 running outside.
Right.
Pretty good. And it's a big area.
It is.
As you said.
It is. Well, obviously, Chief's here representing the administration and the other members of the administration here. And obviously, that's something that you want to put on somebody's agenda, at least for discussion. And there may be some other things that need to be considered as it relates to jurisdictional issues and or potential disputes, some of which I think you've done a great job of resolving. I know one council magic district where on occasion state police and county police are riding together, so I know we can overcome some obstacles where needed.
Yes.
Anyone else from council? Comments, questions? Anyone from the public? Anything under other? Is there a motion?
Motion to adjourn.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
April 4th.
Oh, no. Oh, yeah.